Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Brett's just lying on the floor, just like, oh, my cock. How am I going to be so wholesome on the road now?
The boyhood dream has come true.
All of you, stop to me.
You're about to find out how ugly mankind can really be.
Myself and the clique are going to dance all over your face.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Welcome, everyone. It's the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads recover from what happened in Australia at Elimination Chamber on Saturday. How good was that, getting up at 9 a.m. to watch a pay-per-view? Fuck you, America. We are here via our Ica Pro Power DeLorean back far away from Australia and far away from 2024. We're in 1996 for the last time, as we have been watching every episode of Monday Night Raw from the very fucking beginning to its bitter end, or our bitter end. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, with the mulligan to my O'Hare, the rambunctious Jackie Orlando. Clive, fuck, how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, Tom. Shit. No,
that's lovely. Really no. Sound like my dad.
Tom, shit, come back here and finish that. I don't know where
come
he's
back
from.
Come here and finish your story.
All right, Spag, come finish your story.
That's just like my dad. If you are a Patreon, we apologise for the lack of video last week, but we thank you for your patience and your support. You are seeing a video this week in which Jack Atkins looks like a biker.
I thought I'd channel the game Triple H. I was talking about cool denim vests, and one of my friends said they're not cool. And I was like, I've got a cool one, so I'm going to wear it.
You can't stop me.
So I sent them a picture of it, and they were like, okay, I don't hate it. And I was like, it's cool, isn't it? And they were like, I'm not saying that, but I don't hate it. Like,
okay. It's a cool jacket. So you've got some patches.
I've got, yeah, just there's like a little, there's a little pink snake there. Don't say anything. There's the name piece of Dilla, the hip-hop producer. There's a lovely big wolf on the back. Oh, it's very cool. I'm like Les Battersby.
Oh, penis! Les Battersby wrestled on the other weekend, didn't he? Making his wrestling debut.
Oh, penis.
Just because I remember the pink snake thing and you told me not to make a joke and I've only just remembered why. The penny didn't drop straight away. And I realised why I shouldn't say it, because penis gag, it's fair.
Yeah.
It's a strong look. In comparison, if you can't see us on the Patreon video, I'm wearing a lovely navy hoodie because I've been running from my problems. I'm training for the Great North Run now, which is fucking terrifying to think about. And so I've been doing the Couch to 5K again. Yeah. And for those who have I think it's the BBC Couch to 5K app, because there's a litany of Couch to 5K apps. Oh, this is the NHS one in partnership with the BBC, in which you can choose your voice to kind of G you up as you go around. So the Couch to 5K app, it gives you, if you've not done one of these, it gives you every other day, like a challenge, like a Couch to 5K challenge. So you like,
when you start it, you walk for 3 minutes, run for two, walk for three, run for two. And it builds up week after week after week. It builds up your tolerance. So I'm on, because I did it for a while ago, and I thought, I see if I can jump back in somewhere where I was, and it's horrible, but I have. So I'm on week six, where it's, okay, so you're going to walk for 3 minutes, run for 10, walk for 3 minutes, run for 10. And so, and my voice, who's G'ing me up as I go around, is BBC radio legend Jo Wiley. And she's great.
Hey.
So I'm enjoying that immensely. I'm enjoying hearing Jo Wiley tell me, you've nearly done your run, you fat bastard. She doesn't say that. She's lovely.
She but implies it, though.
I know what she's saying. She knows, she gets me, because there's certain people on there. She gets me. There's like a drill instructor on there, like from America. And when Alex did the Great North Run, Alex had this drill instructor who was like, all right, come on, get on with it. Fucking prick, crack on, like really like pushing you. And because that's how she responds. She responds more to somebody going, fucking come on. Whereas I am a bit more, I'm not so softly that I have the Sarah Millican option, which is her going, come on, nearly done. You can have a bit of cake. So I'm somewhere in the middle of that. I don't want someone shouting at me because that makes me sad, because I'm a soft beast compared to Alex, my wife. But I need somewhere in the middle. So Jo Wiley's doing that for me. So that's my Couch to 5K fun.
When you were starting that, I thought you were going to say like Angela Rippon or something like that for some reason.
I'd fucking love that. I like that now we live in an age of AI where you could potentially get voices really from the past to come and talk you around on a 5K, like Cary Grant.
Or Hitler.
I mean, Cary Grant, Hitler. Oh, who do you want? Mussolini. Who do you want getting you around there? Oh, you've chosen Vlad the Impaler.
This reminds me, just makes me pine for The Office, because I know the memes where that all men talk about the Roman Empire, but in The Office, when we were all in, we'd time until how soon it would be until we started talking about World War II. And it was usually about 6 minutes.
It didn't take long when you were there. It's less so now, I think, because you were a more divine constant for that kind of destructive conversation. So you're not here anymore, so we don't really get that nature, which is a shame, because I do miss it.
It's me and Aiden across Slack now. I'll wake him up and be like, oh, have you heard what Rommel's up to? What a bounder he is.
What's the latest on Rommel? Heard it on a YouTube channel. You will not believe what Rommel has been doing. And like a picture of the YouTuber shocked as Rommel burns the village.
Fuck it.
With the caption, bad man. It's satire, it's fine.
It's fine.
If you're affected by any of the issues in this programme, go to the BBC Action line. Anyway, I think that's us all caught up. I don't think there's any other gossip to share with you this week. No, I went to see Bill Bailey on the weekend. That was fun.
Very nice.
He's a good lad, Bill Bailey. Like Bill Bailey. And then otherwise, just been running away from my problems.
Yeah, I finally went to see Iron Claw the other night, which was...
How was it?
Very good, very good. Obviously, it moves at a relentless pace, and afterwards I got to put on my bollocks hat, and I was like, actually, Sean, this, and this, a gap of this, and then that. Sean hates wrestling, doesn't care for it, but even she came out of it, and she went, that was a bad Ric Flair, that, and I was like... Which I feel bad for the actor, because the actor wasn't bad. If you didn't know who Ric Flair was, it was a great performance. It just happens to be that Ric Flair's, you know, one of the most famous professional wrestlers of all time that everyone knows. So
I imagine that they just had their own idea on doing it, on how they'd want to do it. I mean, I'm wondering what their impetus was. I keep forgetting we're a fucking media company. I could just reach out and find out. I think I will.
Do it.
If we could speak to the guy who played Ric Flair, the Iron Claw.
Yeah. The have you seen it yet?
Not yet, no. I mean, I might have seen it by the time that this goes out, but we were meant to go see it the weekend. We didn't get a chance to in the end, which I hope was a shame. But hoping to see it in the next couple of days. It looks just incredible.
The Harley race is
very good. They got Harley Race nailed on. And I even said to Sean, I was like, oh, you know the fella who was a bit doughy with a handlebar mustache in that Harley Race? I was like, he'd batter everyone you've ever met.
He was a rough boy, wasn't he?
Oh, God, yeah.
Was there an Arn Anderson in there?
There's no Arn Anderson. There is no Arn Anderson. Freebirds turn up. Bruiser Brody's in there. Terry Funk's mentioned, and when I heard Funk, I was like, oh, we got to get a lovely Terry Funk. He's just mentioned, that's it. The weirdest one, obviously it's no spoilers because we don't know the story, Jerry Jarrett. There's a Jerry Jarrett in there.
Oh, my best friend's dad.
Your best friend's dad, the total non-stop arsehole's father himself. You'd be pleased to know, Tom, I did refer to them as total non-stop arseholes in an official article on cultaholic.com the other day.
Thank you, sir. Send me the link to it and I'll make sure that Jeff knows it's there by sharing it on Twitter and telling people not to tag him in it.
Bloody hell.
It's a shame because there was apparently a Terry Funk scene in the film that was removed.
Oh, no.
You will never guess who played Terry Funk.
Was it Lenny Henry?
It was Lenny Henry.
You always had me for a second.
Couldn't I we so... we might have talked about this on the podcast, but there's a few occasions where we've talked about films and I've gone, hey, guess who's playing him? Lenny Henry. So I've dropped him in. So imagine my utter delight on the day that Lord of the Rings Amazon show dropped and Lenny Henry was legitimately in it. I'm beginning to think, Atkins, I might control the world.
That is both a realistic yet absolutely terrifying prospect, Tom.
There's a lot of evidence that suggests I might control the world.
Oh, God.
But what I can control is what we're going to talk about today. We stuck the landing.
Oh, fantastic.
Back on the runway. So yeah. What's going to happen is I'll talk you through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, the last Raw in 1996, Jackie Orlando. Ooh, we've done it.
It's been a long year, Tom.
It's been a really long fucking year. But we're going to end it on, we'll find out whether it's a high or not in a bit. But we're going to talk about what happened in the wrestling world with Jackie Orlando. He has been thumbing through Dave Meltzer's Observers, and he'll tell us what Dave's been talking about this week. In the boring real world, before we get to that, December 30th, 1996, number one movie in the UK box office, 101 Dalmatians, still hanging bloody on hell. In there.
Yeah.
Jerry Maguire, number one in the US box office still. Show me the money!
Yeah, all I've never seen it.
No.
But I know of money.
You're familiar with the concept of money?
Yes.
The movie was inspired by an experience the sports agent Lee Steinberg had with client Tim McDonald during the NFL season in 1993. The film is also inspired by a 28-page memo that Jeffrey Katzenberg wrote for Disney in 1991, the concept of which was, we're in a lot of fucking trouble, here's how we fix it. I know no one's asking me, but here it is. And there's a big part of the film that's based around the idea of this guy just going into this business firm and saying, here's how you fix the company, and just speaking out of turn on everything. And it's his story as he finds his way back. And it's a powerful film. It gave us the catchphrase, show me the money, and you had me at hello.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was from there.
So that's, yep. So it's the phone of the final scenes with Renee Zellweger and Tom Cruise. And in which he pours her heart out to her, and she says, "You had me at hello."
That's lovely. That,
yeah. So it's a lovely day. So show me the money. You had me at hello, and the famous phrase, "Hi, I'm Jerry Maguire,"
as made famous by Thomas Cruise.
Thomas Cruisingtal.
Yeah, yeah.
The number one song in the UK charts is "To Become One" by the Spice Girls.
Oh.
A song that bestowed the virtues of safe sex just in time for New Year's Eve.
Get a little bit closer, baby. Put it on.
Put it on. By that, they mean some nice music for us to have unprotected sex to.
And that nice music was the best
Benny Hill theme.
Oh, God, I was going to say the best of Carcass, but actually, Benny Hill would be even worse.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't stop with the Benny Hill theme on. I wouldn't start either. It's chasing you around the bedroom. So that was a big part of the song, but a beauty of a song at that as well. Like it's one of their more well remembered songs to become one.
Yeah, it's
Come back to me, Orlando.
I think of it when was it in The Vicar of Dibley when old Jim is screaming it. Put a bit love to you, baby.
I'd forgot about that bit. Oh, in the US, the number one song was Unbreak My Heart by Tony Braxton. Still hanging in there.
Jesus wept. The streak.
Get this, right? December 29th, 1996, the day before this episode of Raw, on BBC One, Only Fools and Horses, Time on Our Hands.
Ooh.
Let that sit for a second.
Ooh.
The third episode in a trilogy of Only Fools and Horses comeback shows that at the time appeared to be very much the swan song for Only Fools and Horses, in which, after a series of trials and tribulations that befell the Trotter family, we have a moment where a collector, an antique collector, goes into Del Trotter's garage and discovers a timepiece that has incredible value, and it's just been sat in his garage all these years, and they end up getting something like £2.5 million for it, and they become millionaires. These tryhards, these dodgy dealers finally become millionaires, and 24.3 million people, half the population of the country, watched that episode live. Well, as it aired live.
Yeah, I remember watching this vividly. And just all the nice bits, like Rodney buying Del Boy a Rolls Royce, and, you know, Grandad crashing the speedboat. Not Grandad, Uncle Albert crashed the speedboat and dying in the Thames.
While they played Our House, is a very, very, very fine house.
With two cats in the yard, life used to be so hard, Tom.
It was lovely, and
yeah,
fuck them for not ending it there.
Yeah. Everything after that,
just shit. I don't care what people say about the Christmas special that featured the catchphrase Gary. I would have preferred to have wiped that from history, and then never known that catchphrase, and had Only Fools end on that on this episode. Time on Our Hands.
Yeah, it should have ended there. But like you said, how many was it? 26 million.
Yeah, you're 24.3 million. You couldn't resist having another go, could you?
No, definitely not.
Did. So they did that. They did a couple of comeback episodes where they lost all the money. Fuck you. They did the Frog's Legacy. Not the Frog's Legacy. Sorry, it's called Love and Chips, which was Rock and Chips, which was the prequel to Only Fools and Horses, which was that was fine. But nothing felt as good as the three episodes they did around Christmas in 1996, and this iconic TV ending as well.
Bloody halcyon days, Tom. Now we're in 2024 and counting the days now.
Just counting the days till it all stops. We'll stay in 96, and we will go to the more exciting, romantic world of professional wrestling. And here, with a thumb through Dave's observers, is Jackie Orlando.
Hello. So Dave was gracious enough to lend me a copy of The Observer, dated January the 6th, 1997. We're almost there.
Did he come round and give it to you by hand?
He did, yeah. He came round on his little tricycle, and he was like, "Here you go." And I was like, "Dave, this is covered in filth." And he was like, "Lump it or leave it." And I was like, "All right."
Oh, yeah, mate. Cheers. Hey, if you see Kenny Kabashi, tell him he's a cunt.
Ah, so fuck off, mate. We promised we were going to talk about that again.
I know. I couldn't resist. Tell Kabashi he's a cunt, but you'll know what it means.
It's just banter. You think it's funny. So we're going to start, as we always do, with the WWF. And I'm going off-piste this week, because as we know, we're in the middle of the domination of Nitro over Raw. And we don't often talk ratings here, because I know this is selfish. I don't find ratings interesting.
I did a bit for a while on the Raw and the Nitro podcast, where we did ratings week by week, but it was just not very interesting.
Yeah, it's not interesting. But And the modern discourse about them is even worse. It's like, oh, who cares? Boring. But I do have to talk about this one because the last week's Raw, December 23rd, did its worst mark in history. Not only for a Raw show, but the lowest for any Monday night wrestling show dating back to TNT and primetime wrestling in the early 1980s. So it did a 1.5 rating and a 2.6 share. Nitro more than doubled Raw's rating overall and nearly doubled it in the head-to-head hour. In fact, the Nitro replay did a 1.6 and 3.5 share, which was better than the initial showing of Raw. Bloody so, hell. Yeah, so that's all the ratings you're getting for probably another 4 months. So if you like ratings, you can have that. The only other WWF news this week is that Shotgun Saturday Night is debuting January 4th. Confirmed for it, it's Sultan versus Rocky Maivia, Salvatore Sincere versus Goldust, and Grim Twins versus the Godwins as the three matches.
Grim Twins? I thought that sounded like a brand of tea.
Oh, true. Grim Twins, and it'll help you shit.
Lovely cup of Grim Twins on a morning.
Oh, when you're eating a stotty filled with blood, have a Grim Twins to wash it down.
It'll make you poo. Grim Twins.
That's cracking.
Hey, Rock Rikishi then on the first Shotgun Saturday Night.
The very first Shotgun Saturday Night, yeah. Ooh. They did it for each other, it seems.
Yeah, apparently so. I wonder who drove that night.
Yeah. Tom Pritchard. He does everything.
He drove.
So we go from the WWF. Not having it. We go from the WWF to the wacky world of Extreme Championship Wrestling, and we've had some, you know, throws and twos about the pay-per-view. It looks like it's set to rumble on. Last week, Dave was saying the pay-per-view slot had been cancelled due to mass transit, Tyler Fullington, and the arena fire. There have been movements this week. ECW executive Steve Carell, not that one, called with pay-per-view provider Request TV to try salvage a deal, with Request President Hugh Pinheiro saying at different points, as the new kid on the block, they have to demonstrate they, brackets ECW, are up to the same level of professionalism as WWF and WCW. My people thought they were like WWF and WCW, and when we found out differently, we started to do more research. I have no intention of banning them, so they're just going to try and work something out.
I love how close they came to, like, they just went, oh, it's like WWF. Okay, that's fine. We'll look no further for a while.
What's that? Someone got crucified.
Surely not. It's wrestling. Don't be silly.
No, don't be daft. So a little bit of WCW. And now I'll leave this to yourself and Sam Driver. But this week in The Observer, it's coming off Starrcade 96. Again, I'll leave it for yourself and Sam. But that looks like a hell of a show, Tom. And I'm quite jealous. So I hope you enjoy it.
Well, it is. So we're a few weeks behind the Raw review on the Nitro review. We have just seen the debut of Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Ooh.
So he rocked up at Halloween Havoc and talked for far too long, to the point where they actually play them off, the pay-per-view provider. They spent all the following Nitro promising that we're going to hear the full thing and then decide to never play us the full thing ever. So that's good, isn't it? I love a broken
now, hold
promise.
Now, let me tell you something.
That's basically what it was.
Yeah.
My dad's a dustman. All right, Piper.
A little bit more WCW news outside of that. From all accounts, a deal to bring in Bam Bam Bigelow fell through as Bigelow turned it down. They wanted him in the NWO, and one of the reasons he left the WWF in the first place was because he doesn't like Kevin Nash.
I love that. Oh, sorry to hear you left WWF. Any reason? Yeah, Kevin Nash is a dickhead. Okay, well, do you want to come over here? Yeah, what are you thinking? Kevin Nash? What? No, what? Nothing. Do you want to come over here or not?
No, I'm all right.
Okay. Wah.
So we go from there to a little dusting of New Japan. We've got two bits of New Japan here, because obviously we're gearing up for the January 4th Tokyo Dome show.
Hey!
So 1997 will mark the 25th anniversary of New Japan. Dave's
as the show will probably be the largest crowd in the history of pro wrestling ever drawn solely through tradition. Because he's saying most of your big crowds have been drawn from a killer main event or a hot promotion, but this has neither, but will probably get at least 50,000 people through the door. So that's quite big.
I mean, that's the sign of when a company is hot, where you just go, we're putting on a show, and before any of matches are announced, then, oh, we've sold out, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All in at Wembley is a great example of that. You know, yeah, better for worse. I mean, don't get me wrong, pissed me off that they decided to not announce any matches until probably 10 minutes before. But the fact that they sold as many tickets as they did without having anything on the card or on the docket was a testament to the power in that marketplace, as it is with New Japan celebrating its anniversary.
Well, fair fucks to them. Staying with New Japan, Antonio Inoki is working on promoting a show in Cuba in 1997 and has a meeting with Fidel Castro about it on January 9th.
Of course Dave, he does.
Dave actually wrote, no, I'm not making this one up.
Hang on, that's an interesting turn of phrase. No, I'm not making this one up.
Exactly.
Dave. David Hercules Meltzer.
Give me a break, mate. Don't worry about it. It's just a little white lie, isn't it? It's fine. Just covering me old back and my old China.
It's all right. I mean, I didn't make this up. The other week I said that Kenny Kabashi wasn't a big cunt. that's blatantly a lie, isn't it? Check my sources.
So we go, of course, from the crazy world of Arthur Brown to the USWA. And they are building up a few everyone was waiting for. We are finally getting Mo versus Mabel. That's right.
Oh, come on! Just one more fight about your royalty. Oh, that's a fucking novelty.
And you've been taking liberties.
Kabashi's a cunt. Hey!
Hey!
Really, we're getting Mabel versus Mo with the USWA?
Apparently so. Mo did an interview saying that he taught Mabel everything he knows, which in Dave's words is nothing I'd be bragging about. And that's everything for the Observer this week. Thought I'd end on that bombshell.
Does the Mabel Mo match actually happen?
Oh God, if it does, I don't know if I want to watch it or not, because it's either going to be tragic or tragic.
Oh, well, I just did a quick little Google and there is, on YouTube, you can watch the segment where Mabel and Mo break up. That looks too heartbreaking. I'm not ready for that. Cage Match will know. Our friends at Cage Match will know whether Mabel and Mo had a match. Mo was in Newcastle recently.
Did you go for a pint?
Sadly, I didn't. So, Mo runs a wrestling promotion in America. And they did a dual show with Contract Pro Wrestling in the Northeast. And part of that saw Mo and some of his lads from America come over and do like a training day. I didn't know until after I don't know whether Mandela affected it, but I'm sure I've seen a picture of Mo near Gray's Monument in Newcastle. I'm sure I have. I'm sure I saw Mo at Gray's Monument in Newcastle.
It's the Mo Triangle to join the Jericho Triangle.
It's the same thing. The Mo Triangle. Right, okay, USWA. Oh my God, it happened.
Oh God.
It happened, but it won't yet. So they're starting the build now. It won't happen until the 9th of January, and it's a lumberjack match.
Wow.
I will spoil it for you, sir. Mabel beats Mo.
Boo.
Yeah, I know. I'm as upset as you are.
Predictable.
Boring wrestling. So that's the Observer. Thank you for thumbing through Dave's Observers for this week. Let's look ahead to television this week. Before we get into Raw, let's do our favourite section. Not our favourite section. Tom, skip through superstars this week. December 29th, superstars. The Honky Tonk Man comes out, steps in the ring, goes, I'm not here to sing for you tonight. Thanks very much. You've been a great audience. And leaves. He joins commentary for the rest of the night. He is still looking for talent. Goldust beats Leaf Cassidy, We did a little picture-in-picture from Hunter, promising that Marlena will be on his arm soon. Steve Austin beats Eddie Jackie and Jason Arndt in a handicap match. He fucking batters them.
Wow.
Eddie Jackie was on WCW Pro 2 weeks before, so he's a hired gun of the highest order. He's like the jobber Lex Luger. Good lad.
Turns up in a puffy shirt. No one knows who he is.
He could walk in with a fucking shirt that said, "I'm Eddie Jackie" on, and no one would know who he was.
What's he doing here? Get him out of here.
But Eric Bischoff just fucking losing his mind as he sizes up Hogan, who shouts at him later for getting it wrong. Later in the night, Eddie and Jason are attended to backstage. They've been pilmanized by Steve Austin with chairs. Piece of shit.
Just mean, isn't it?
He's just a very mean boy.
Just a mean boy, that's Steve Austin.
Farouk beats Alex the Pug Porto. I feel like the honeymoon is over for Pug. I feel like we've missed the off ramp for Pug.
It's been that long since we've seen the Pug. I'd forgotten about him.
I know. He looks great, but he loses clean to Farouk with the Dominator. Mm. Here's a little interesting tidbit. Phineas Godwin faces the Stalker, Barry Windham.
Hmm.
Before the match, Justin Bradshaw comes to the ring and has a right go at Barry Windham, saying that he needs to stop being the Stalker and respect his wrestling heritage. This leads to Phineas Godwin losing to the Stalker. Afterwards, Bradshaw runs out and attacks the Godwins, and the Stalker helps him. There's a little bit of uncertainty here, but are we possibly getting a tag team with Bradshaw and the Stalker?
My clairvoyant powers are saying they're going to be called the new fruit salads.
That sounds better than what they fucking did. Fucking fruit salads. I love that. That's the best gag of the show so far. I don't care what anyone fucking says.
I get paid. I'm not telling you how much, I just get paid.
I'm sending you an extra fiver this week.
Yes.
Sid is interviewed by Kevin Kelly. His music is blaring and nothing is said, really. It's the same interview we did on Raw last week, where he just goes,
Amazing.
I'm good, me. Bye.
Right, but Sydney, me. And then he'll whisper, and then he'll shout, and then he'll laugh, and then he'll whisper, and then he might poo himself. That's Sydney for you.
That's his whole title reign that you've just basically described there in a handful of sentences.
Mm.
Savio Vega defeats Vader by countout in the main event. Now, last week I failed to mention, I was so excited to see Undertaker versus Kane embryonic version that I forgot to mention the reason that the match didn't have a conclusive finish was because Vader came out and attacked the Undertaker. So that happened, which is important for storylines going forward, because Vega beats Vader by countout. As Vader goes for the Vader bomb, the lights go out and we get a dong. And Undertaker tells Vader, it's time. It's time for you, Vader, to meet your maker. And Vader looks scared and Vega wins by countout. So that bleeds into Raw for this week.
Mm. So I'm not enamored with the idea of a scared Vader.
No, me neither.
He should just be like, come on then, let's just start throwing bombs at each other, but it is what it is.
We fix it on Raw, so that's fine.
Yeah.
To Raw we go for December the 30th, 1996. We get a video package showing the animosity between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Tonight, they will be face-to-face on Raw. Bret says he's going to tell Shawn face-to-face exactly what he thinks of him, as long as the microphone isn't fucked. might have added that last bit. Shawn says tonight he'll find out what the WWF's role model has to say when he comes face to face with WWF's favourite degenerate. He said the thing, Jackie Orlando!
I've been banging the drum for weeks that we are taking the first steps into the Attitude Era.
No, that is not what you have been saying, Jackie.
No, okay then.
Handsome and kind individual.
This is the Attitude Era, and this is fucking confirmed it. Shawn Michaels clearly on some kind of illegal substance, saying he's a degenerate and telling Bret Hart to piss off. We're here, Tom, and we're comfortable.
Fine then. Anyway, he said degenerate. He said the thing. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
We are in the Knickerbocker Arena where Ric Flair won the Rumble.
With a tear in his eye.
The opening is Farouk teaming with Steve Austin to face Jesse James and Savio Vega. We get a recap of Austin pilmanizing those two poor jobbers on Superstars. Bless their souls. Jesse James is singing to the ring, and Austin doesn't like the singing. Fucking jumps in mid-song, which I found quite funny.
I did get slight Road Dogg vibes, though, because before he started singing, he was trying to G the crowd up a bit. And it wasn't you didn't know, but he was just kind of being Road Dogg-esque. And he felt more comfortable in the role this week.
He felt a bit more in his own skin, didn't he?
Yeah, but he definitely did.
Having said that, do you feel that when you're in there with Steve Austin, who's a very real sort of Attitude Era-esque persona, that a character like Jesse James just feels so out of time?
Yes, but we'll see later on in this episode of Raw, something else feels more out of time than even this did, Tom.
That's very, very true. Mm. The baddies control the start of this match. Farouk landing a lovely spinebuster. Mm. He's very good at them, is our Farouk.
Oh, very nice. Very nice spinebuster by Big Ronald.
Him and Arn Anderson, innit?
Definitely, yeah. And I'd say Batista third.
Nice shout. Appreciate that. Bret Hart is watching the opening tag match, keeping an eye on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Savio takes a shoe-in until Jesse gets a hot tag, gets a bit of a flurry on Austin and Farouk. Double J then gets dumped to the outside and he lands badly. He's not in a good way. Austin goes to attack him outside and here comes casual Bret Hart to run out and keep Austin at bay. We go to break. When we come back from break, Bret Hart is on the apron in his jeans. He has replaced...
Jeans!
It is Jeans Bulldog, but Jeans Bret Hart! Fucking come on!
As I've got in my notes, I put, what in the holy hell shows Batman? Bret's just in his jeans like a proto-Bulldog.
Bulldog was watching backstage going, oh, wrestling jeans.
Yeah, that's not bad, that.
Save loads on washing.
Yeah.
Just wear them home.
And I'll paint the kitchen in them, it's fine.
That'd be fine. Hey, Diana, get us 400 pairs of jeans. Is that not too many, Dave? No. One for each day of the year. But Dave, there's not 400 days. There is. It's a leap year. I was divorced, Dave. All right, fine.
Oh, no, sorry. My watch is still set to Mars time.
She's about to ask, why is it set on Mars time? But then she just pours a brandy and leaves the room. Whatever, Dave. Go fucking play Doom, you dick.
Yes.
I win again. Bret Hart is replacing Double J. It is Gene-flavoured Bret Hart. It's pre-Gene shorts Bret Hart in full Gene Bret Hart. I presume he just grows too big for them. Austin beats up Vega, gives the middle finger elbow, possibly for the first time.
Yes, I noticed this. I know, I replayed it. He doesn't have the middle fingers up, but he is doing the, I think he calls it the big fuck you, doesn't he?
Yeah, where he kind of waves his hands in the air. Like, I thought he did a middle finger, but I might have misremembered that. We get a hot tag to Bret. He beats up Austin and Farouk in his fucking jeans. He goes to put Farouk in the sharpshooter, but he gets jumped by the Nation of Domination. He and Savio, they get a pasting for their trouble. Ahmed Johnson! There he is. And his 2x4 make the save. Ahmed telling Farouk that he is going down, he's going down, he's going down at the Royal Rumble. Fucking hell. Pass me the candle, we've got a match.
Let's not gloss over what Ahmed was wearing. So he's wearing his boots, he's wearing his big socks, at which point Bulldog went, oh, jeans, boots and big socks, lovely.
Diana, order 400 big socks.
Not 400 pairs, just 400 socks. One for every foot of Toblerone I'm going to wear. So Ahmed's in boots, he's in socks, he's in blue Terry Funk pants and a jacket while holding a plank and yelling down the mic. It's gorgeous.
It is a very 1996 look that he has going on here.
Yeah. I loved all of this. I've said many times that I like it when the WWF feels like a living, breathing organism. I'd like it in wrestling when feuds all bleed in together, because everyone should hate everyone. You're all competing to get to the top. It doesn't matter if you don't like this guy right now. You should also be keeping your eye on this guy. So you've got Brett coming out, even though he's been arguing with Sid and he's been arguing with Sean, he's still pissed off at Austin. You've got Savio still doesn't really like Austin. You've got the Nation of Domination just fighting anyone. You've got Ahmed still over and everyone's chatting. You're going, oh, this was liquid.
Like you say, living, breathing organism.
Mm.
Which is a nice
That's what I like most about wrestling. Everything should feel like... Obviously, we know it's scripted. Obviously, we know there's a rundown, but the chaotic nature of it, it's like, oh, I can't go out yet. It is not time for my match. Whereas here, it's just like, no, I'm just going to run out of a plank. Someone's getting smacked. Brilliant.
Adam and George are in the Alamo Dome. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Can't be arsed with that. They're just dicking about the Alamo Dome ahead of the Rumble. I can't wait for the Rumble. One, because I'm excited for the Rumble. And two, it means that these segments end. I hope they leave them there.
I was just thinking... Has the Alamo Dome not held any other events for a month? Jesus Christ, times are hard.
Yeah, I know, right? They're just chilling. I'd like it if they... It would be more intriguing if they had to sort of get around with other events going on.
Yeah, they're there for like a Gloria Estefan show and they're just like, oh, this is all right, I guess.
You just have to sort of stand there as people shuffle past them to get to the bar and stuff. I'd like that more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Up next, a non-title match. It is Flash Funk versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
And a lot of pyro for the flashiest of Funk and the Funkettes.
So much bloody pyro for the Funk and the Funkettes. Hunter, picture in picture, as Funk comes to the ring, says Funk is a great wrestler, but he does not deserve to face the IC champion. It's a non-title match. Boo-boo to you, Hunter. He says he's going to show Marlena, Goldust's valet and wife, what a real man looks like at the Rumble. So we're still building to that as we are watching Flash Funk walk to the ring and peep, fuck you in the arena, right? Funk's great and people are sat on their fucking hands. How can you be sat on your hands?
It's, oh God. And as we'll see as the match kicks off, he's pulling out stuff you don't see that often. They're just not asked.
He's amazing. And everyone's like, bothered. Fucking heathens. Philistines.
I take it you weren't overly enamoured with this then, Tom.
No, I love this. I'm annoyed with the crowd.
Yeah, but that can affect your enjoyment of a match.
True. Goldust enters through the crowd. He takes a gold spotlight seat in the audience to watch Hunter once again. And Hunter is livid about it, as is Jerry Lawler, who is facing Goldust later tonight. It throws him off because Flash is in charge from the beginning of this match. Lovely inverted enziguri. Lovely standing moonsault from Flash to no reaction, you fucking heathens.
Like, who's doing standing moonsault splashes in 1996 in WWF? There's no bugger.
No.
And people just don't care.
fucking idiots. Jerry Lawler is slagging off Goldust on commentary. He says, Hillary Clinton wrote a book about raising her child called It Takes a Village. Goldust wrote one called It Takes the Village People. Lol, lol, gay lol. Hunter slows it down, works over funk during the break. Back from break, Jerry Lawler's on the microphone and he starts giving Goldust some grief for attempting to distract Hunter by being here. Goldust comes down the ramp to meet Lawler. Funk gets a near fall off a moonsault. He's done a fucking moonsault, you fucking heathens.
Gorgeous moonsault as well.
Really lovely. The referee is distracted by stopping a man who's not involved in the match fighting another man that's not involved in the match. Consequently, Helmsley clocks Funk with the title and picks up the win off the back of that. Goldust then stalks Lawler up the ramp. Hunter tries for a sneak attack and Funk then comes back alive and stops him. He chucks Hunter back into the ring and lands a 450 for effect, leaving not with the title because it's non-title anyway, but a moral victory at the end. Flash, Funk is great. What's your problem?
I felt really bad for him because they put him in such a tough spot. It's too early in his run for him to be doing a job. It's too early in his run for him to be going up against Helmsley. And he got a little bit of heat from the post-match attack. And then you got Lawler completely overshadowing everyone and everything by calling Goldust, you know, homophobic slur. Well, he didn't call them slurs this week, but he was, you know, it was, oh, God, yeah, yeah. I mean, the in-ring action, Hunter sold his arse off for Flash Funk, as you'd expect. It took them a little minute or two to find their chemistry, but after that, it was, like you said, it's Hunter Hurst Helmsley versus Flash Funk. It's never going to be a bad match, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up next, the face-to-face in the place, London. Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart heading to the ring. Jim Ross is going to lead this conversation. It's been bubbling over for a while now. Both guys taking little digs at each other on commentary and in promo time and stuff. So we're going to get a little bit of steam let off between the two. Next week, it's Bret versus Vader. And Shawn has revealed he'll be at ringside, but he promises he won't dare interfere or get involved in Bret's match next week.
I wonder if he will or not, Tom.
Wink. I wonder. JR asks Shawn to start the face-to-face, but Shawn insists on the almighty Bret Hart going first. After all, he, Shawn Michaels, is just a low-life degenerate. He said the fucking thing, pick it down! Dripping with sarcasm, Shawn. Love him. Bret starts, and bless him, his microphone is fucked. So a lot of this gets lost in translation and lost in the ether. But he says that Shawn's whole attitude is disrespectful. He says he learned attitude. Sorry, I wrote that wrong. Bret's whole new generation is disrespectful.
Fuck off.
Bret says he's learned nothing about respect and integrity from Jose Lothario. And then I've just put here, Bret's microphone is fucked. Ha ha. Bret remembers being screwed out of the belt last year at WrestleMania. He says Shawn promised to carry the belt with the same pride that he, Bret Hart, did, and Shawn never came close. Bret says kids, and his kids in particular, used to look up to Shawn, but then he went and posed for Playgirl, suggesting that not many women are reading Playgirl. Well, I'd argue most women are reading Playgirl. That's the audience. But I get what he's saying, and it's very out of time.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Bret, you're better than that. Come on, mate.
Bret says Shawn isn't a man's man like he claims, but he says that Shawn has no class. He's a disgrace, and he welcomes any opportunity to kick his ass. Whee. And you want to know why? Because I can, which is a weird new catchphrase for Bret Hart that I hope does not catch on.
I was fucking into this. I like Bret Hart being a prick and just being like, you know what? I've had enough of being like the goody two shoes. Oh, I'll put on the best matches. I'm going to kick your head in because I can't because I'm hard. And I'm just like, sold. Thank you. I can't wait for this match.
Shawn Michaels.
In 10 months' time.
Oh, what a way we have it, though. Shawn hopes that Bret finally got the bug out of his butt and it's his turn now. And Shawn says, I've seen you on the road. You ain't no role model. And before we get Bret Hart's autobiography about 20 years early, We get Sid turning up. But I was like, oh, no, I wanted to hear all the stories about Brett being a philanderer on the road, which we find out in later years. We don't get it, though.
Yeah. I wonder how long it is until Brett beats the shit out of Sean backstage, because we know it's coming.
Oh, it is coming. But on this night, Sid interrupts, and he's great here because he interrupts by leaning into JR's mic and just going, ah!
But it's the fact you've got Bret Hart, jeans and a leather, like Montreal Hitman. No, it's not. Calgary Hitman, whatever it is. He's got a leather jacket on. Shawn Michaels, shirt, jeans, sunglasses. Sid, undies, boots, wrist tape, elbow pad and title, screaming into a microphone.
Great, isn't it? God love him.
And the Sid chants as well. Everyone's going, yes, fucking Sid, he's mental.
Fucking love Sid. And Sid has real grievance to come out here. Because he's like, why are you taking up TV time? I beat you and I beat you. Fuck off.
Yeah.
He now wants real competition, says Sid. And on that, the bell tolls. Dong. No music. But the Undertaker walks out.
Yeah.
Here he comes. He heads to the ring. He wants a piece of Sid. But he is attacked from behind by Vader, who I have written in my notes does, you know, the concept of a dad run.
Yeah, like a bit of a shuffle.
Yeah, like a slightly faster shuffle, somewhat the speed I was doing for my 5K today. A dad run-in, I have called this.
Nice, very nice.
Because he doesn't get much pace up, but God love him, he gets there in the end. Vader and Undertaker start fighting on the ramp, and Taker sends Vader packing, and he gets a chance to go nose to nose with Sid on the ramp for a few seconds to titillate us for a potential showdown between these two titans.
Mm.
Vader then recovers and breaks it up. Then we see Brett go to leave the ring as if he's gone, that's my segment done, I'm done. And as he steps through the ropes, Sean, the complete dickhead, pulls the middle rope and low blows him.
Yeah, I noticed that. And then Brett's just lying on the floor, just like, oh, me cock. How am I going to be so wholesome on the road now?
I had a woman I was going to be wholesome with later, and now I can't because my dick hurts. But he does it so quick, you nearly miss it. He pulls the rope, so he catches Sean in the bowels, and then springboards over onto Sid out of the ring. Like, it was a really good little moment. And then we see Sean and Sid brawling as referees, and Pat Patterson in a lovely jumper.
Wow. Oh, lovely jumper.
Really lovely jumper. Break up the fray. We don't know what happens to Brett. I presume he just dissolves. We never see him again. So your thoughts on the face-to-face with Sean and Brett?
What I said about the opening package with, you know, it feeling like a living, breathing organism, I fucking love this. It's no secret I'm a Bret Hart man. I like it when Bret Hart isn't cutting a promo. He's just speaking from the heart, and they let him do it here. And he was just angry about it, and he was narked and focused. Sean was being a prick, and he went, you know, a bit into real life, which will piss off Bret. You've got Sid being mental. You've got Undertaker. You've got Vader. You've got fighting going on all over the place. It's, into it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I've been sort of batting this back for weeks and weeks on end. And I will say this, Jackie Orlando, I will concede this. This felt very Attitude Era.
Yes.
It really, really did. We're still not in the Attitude Era, but it felt very Attitude Era.
It's I was thinking about this the other night. You know, the way that when we think of decades, we think of the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. But when you think about it, the 80s is really like 82 to 92, because the end of the last decade bleeds over into the next one. So we're in the Attitude Era, but we've still got bits of New Gen bleeding into it. We are in that kind of mixed fudge right now.
We're in the mixed fudge era.
We are. It's delicious.
That's true, actually. There is a bit of a bleed over from the 80s and the 90s. That kind of means that a bit of the 90s is also a bit of the 80s.
Yeah, because when you look at like 1990 and 1991, it is still like people have still got mullets. There's still like loud tracksuits and stuff before everyone grew out their mullets and turned their tracksuits into jeans, like the British Bulldog did.
Of course.
So there's always a blending period.
I find it amazing that only until recently there were still radio stations that had the tagline playing the best of the 80s, 90s and today. And I was like, well, that covers 24 years.
Yeah, exactly. There's, yeah.
We've got to let go of this now, lads. Like, the 80s was a long time ago. 84 was 40 years ago.
We've got a combined age of 75, Tom.
Oh, mate, if we combine our ages, we could retire. Live off the government. Get free buses everywhere. I'm so excited. For the
Where
day
are you going? Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Somewhere. I'm so excited for the day that I can sit on my porch, knowing that I've done all the good I can do in the world, and just sit on my porch with in a lovely rocking chair and a table with a vinyl record player playing something like fucking "Smack Your Bitch Up" by Prodigy, one of the classics, and watch the world go by. My hair all grey, my beard all long. You know, Alex may be still around if she hasn't got bored of me. And I weirdly look forward to that day where I can watch the sunset on a grateful universe, knowing I've talked all the bollocks I can about wrestling.
Well, you do control the universe, Tom. And I hope that when you are sitting there looking over your domain, that you look over and see a nice drawing of me and you and being like, oh, it's been 30 years since Jackie Orlando was executed for crimes against humanity.
Or so we think, because then I'll look to the left and in a bush I can just see a feral looking man that looks a bit like Jackie Orlando did back in the day, eating the meat from a ferret that he caught. And I just go, he's living his dream. I'll say nothing.
I will make eye contact. I'll just mouth. I'll mouth the words, you ain't fucking seen nothing, lad. I'll just run off.
And I'll do a little nod in your general direction. And then Alex will come out and go, who was that, dear? And I'll go, oh, no one. And a little tear roll down my eye and I'll just wipe it away. And oh, that's like the end of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that.
Yeah, apart from, I don't think the Marvel Cinematic Universe will end up with me shitting into a blue carrier bag.
It will if I have my way. That all good films should end. Back to Raw, sadly. Vince McMahon is joined on commentary by the fucking Honky Tonk Man, who is the flavour of the fucking month for some reason.
They're getting their money's worth out of Honky, aren't they? Jesus.
They really are. He and Hunter Hearst Helmsley join Vince on commentary because Jerry Lawler is in the ring. He's fighting Goldust.
And as soon as he came out, I was like, okay, we are still lingering a bit in the New Gen era. It brought me back to earth with a bump.
Was a bit of a throwback, wasn't it? Someone's made a sign that says Lawler rules. I hope they're banned from the arena. We don't need that kind of energy.
No, don't encourage him.
We get the Starburst Fruit Twist Rewind, which is new, I think.
And it was a waste of time.
Yeah, it was. Here's what happened 20 minutes ago. In case you missed it.
But it didn't even show the whole thing. It just showed Ahmed Johnson turning up with a plank and then it cut. And it was like, yeah, thanks, Starburst. It's like, all right, lads, okay.
Do you remember when they were opal fruits?
Oh, God. Don't. You'll have me crying, Tom. You'll have me crying thinking about, you know, when times were easy and opal fruits were opal fruits.
Opal fruits made to make your mouth water.
See, I don't remember that tagline, but I will still keep it in my heart.
Keep it there for you. Goldust and Lawler, the match started during the Opal Fruits bit because Lawler is now in the ring hurt. Goldust is outside the ring, jawjacking with Helmsley, who's on commentary. Mm. Lawler does an axe handle off the apron to get Goldust's attention. Back in the ring, Lawler lands his middle rope fist drop and Hunter lusts after Marlena on commentary as Goldust fights back. Honky pipes up asking Hunter if Hunter will be the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. And this is the thing, right? Honky doesn't weigh in unless he's talking about him, his plans to sign someone, or if someone's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, fair fucks, he got quite far.
He did very well, and then Gunther came along and spoiled all the fun.
Yeah.
He's on the hunt for his newest talent, is the Honky Tonk Man. Hunter puts his case forward as the best in the WWF right now. And Honky seems to just like not react to this at all. So Honky has been offered Hunter and Steve Austin at this point and has gone, oh, I'm still looking. So he's running out of options, but I'm sure he's got somebody in mind that's going to rock everybody's heart.
Ken Kobashi, yeah.
Oh, I'd love that. It's Ken Kobashi!
Yeah, you all right?
Dave Meltzer going, some cunt debuted as Honky Tonk Man's new valet. Yay!
Knobhead.
Knobhead. Apparently WWF are calling him Knobhead now. Oh, yeah. Start that rumour. Why'd you start that rumour, Dave? Oh, shut up, Ken. It's a bit of fun.
Bit of fun, mate. Bit of fun. No real pay attention. Don't worry about it.
Everyone thinks that my name's Knobhead now. It's hanging up phone going, click.
And then sitting there for 4 hours on his own, just going,
fucking shouting him. I'm so lonely. why does it always get dark? Hunter goes to take a closer look at the action. And by that he means he's going to pick up Marlena and carry her to the back like Tarzan.
Just abducts her. Yeah, just abducts a woman.
He should have been honest and gone, I'm just going to go and abduct a woman.
Like, right you are. See you later.
Bye.
Have fun.
Mark Mero appears on the ramp to stop Hunter from abducting a woman. Mm. Hunter throws Marlena at Mero. Mero catches her. By this point, Goldust has gotten wind of what's happening. He's run down the ramp and he charges at Hunter, and Hunter steps to the side. So Goldust is sent clattering into Mero and Marlena. Hunter beats up Goldust on the floor. The ref counts him out, and Marlena and Goldust are down and out as Hunter heads to the back. The damage done to end Monday Night Raw. And the last Raw of 1996.
Oh, 1996 is done. Going back to that match, that was a nothing match. It was just an angle. But again, you got Mero getting involved. The catch of Marlena was really good. And I like the fact that Hunter then just beat the fuck out of two former Intercontinental champions by himself.
Didn't know Marlena won the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, she held it for 24 days. She was better than Dean Douglas. The final Raw of 1996, and I felt a very strong episode. Like we have said ad nauseum, the character and feud building is next level. Main event scene is stacked. Obviously we've seen the better feuds this week, so no guns this week. Unfortunately, we didn't see any Owen and Bulldog versus Furnace and Lafon, but everything else just strong. Liked it. Packed a lot into 45 minutes.
I enjoyed the stare down between Brett and Sean, and the face-to-face that teased some real edgy content to come out of those two in 1997.
Oh, boy, howdy.
Just a little bit, I'd say. And you know what? As I say, lots of flex of the Attitude Era, whether you want to believe it or not, that we are hurtling towards that decade, or that era, rather. So... What comes back to you? We've covered so much in 1996. Is there a particular highlight from this year?
What? Just how exciting it's been watching Steve Austin become Stone Cold Steve Austin. From a good hand in the mid card to us like noticing every little bit which will become synonymous with his character, from like the first Luther's press, the first time he calls someone Son, Austin 316, the mud holes. It's just knowing what's to come. It's very exciting. What about yourself?
I think the rise of more unorthodox characters around this new generation fodder. You know, you've still got quite a few around there, but then you've had Mankind in this.
Oh God, yeah,
in this year that's coming through. We've had a new darker edge to the Undertaker in this year. We've seen, you know, it's not been the perfect run, but we've certainly seen Vader. With some big strides in this year. Not exactly the way they wanted it to go, but it did nonetheless. Shawn Michaels has been a fascinating character to watch as the crowd sentiment has changed. He's rode that wave as well. And they've been... Whereas before, and I think this is a bit understated, really. Whereas before, with guys like Diesel, they... try their best to push down any negative sentiment and just focus on all the good stuff. Here's Diesel feeding the homeless. Here's Diesel doing a Make-A-Wish. Diesel's great. Diesel's coming out to go, all the baddies are rubbish. Whereas here, like, Sean is getting some boos and they are acknowledging them. And they are and they are accepting that Sean is, as Jackie Orlando would say, part of a living, breathing organism that may not necessarily be one way or another. And they're embracing it rather than hiding from it. And I think that's a great little tester of the water for what is to come for one of their biggest stars of all time.
Mm. I think it does help as well that they got Bret Hart back, so they can't afford to acknowledge the boos for Sean, because they're just like, well, if people completely reject Sean, we've still got Bret. if Brett wasn't back, I don't know if they would have done it.
Do you not think they would have? They would have just sort of resisted the urge to lean into it.
Probably, yeah. But
yeah, without a fallback, I think that probably makes sense.
Oh, I mean, there's always Bulldog, of course.
And of course, Bulldog became a champion this year, headlined a pay-per-view this year. We've barely talked about our boy.
I mean, we still talked about him even though he's not been on. But I mean, 1997, you know, it'll be another gold-laden year for Brit. Well, not even a year. We don't even have a full year of Bulldog left.
I think we do. He's there till at least November.
November, but it's just...
That's good enough.
That's fine, but it's just knowing that the hourglass for Bret Hart is ending for me. But we'll get other bastards, I'm sure. Undertaker will have some family who'll turn up. Who knows?
Oh, wouldn't that be a thing? Undertaker's family turning up in 1997. Yeah. Obviously, Bret Hart's family uniting in 1997.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
In big fashion. A WrestleMania that doesn't necessarily hit the mark, but it's hilarious in its delivery, which a series of unfortunate events creates the biggest star on the planet. We have that. We have Shawn Michaels losing his smile to look forward to next year. The first ever Hell in a Cell next year. And we do have the advent of Attitude next year.
Yeah. I still can't believe, like... Because people debate this online. I think Vince Russo was credited at the start of the Attitude Era with Goldust turning up. Some people say it's Austin 316. For me, I'm going to say, even though I've been saying it for ages, I'm going to say Survivor Series 96. Just that Austin Brett promo for me is the first bang. Here we fucking go. We are leaning into this now. But there's still people who say it's not until Vince makes his speech about good guys and bad guys, but it's... If it's not now, it's at least WrestleMania. I don't think anyone could argue. But it's, oh God. I mean, I know the in-ring quality is not going to be great after then on the whole, but it's just so exciting.
We are on the way, sir. So that means next week we'll have new theme music.
Mm.
There you go, a little bit of admin for you. I'm making new theme music as we speak.
Because I was eating a bagel before and thinking, what are like the big... promos of the year, and we'll talk about this off air.
Yeah, we'll throw a few ideas around when we come off air. Anything you want to plug?
No. You and your efforts and your training for the Great North Run.
Oh, yeah, at Tom Campbell, if you'd like to sponsor me, there's a pinned tweet. It's all going to CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. I thank you all. On the podcast feed, I had a lovely chat about half an hour before you and I sat down, Jackie Orlando, when I said to you, oh, I've tested the equipment to make sure that it works this week.
Yeah.
I tested the equipment on undisputed British heavyweight champion, Michael Oku.
Oh, fantastic.
Who just the other day had possibly the greatest match of his career, possibly the match of the year, against Will Ospreay at Rev Pro High Stakes. And you'll love it. We really get into the sauce. We really get into how the sausage is made on that banger of a match they had at Rev Pro.
Yeah, he's what a fantastic wrestler he is. I can't wait. As much as, you know, obviously he's so key to the British scene, I can't wait to see him go further afield more in the next year or so and see him. I'd like to see him in New Japan more. I'd like to see him in TNA, anywhere. He's fantastic.
Well, he told me in the interview, which you will have heard by now, that he had, quote, a nice chat with Tony Khan.
Oh.
He wouldn't tell me what the nice chat was about, no matter how many hilarious ways I attempted to find out. but it was a well-received chat about, obviously, what Tony had just seen from Michael Oku. He also wrestled that match at High Stakes with a really bad chest cold.
Oh, okay.
There's a little fun factoid.
Tony Khan was in the building, wasn't he? Because obviously he's watching Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy was there. So
he was getting into it with Tony at Rev Pro High Stakes. Honestly, he was having a lovely time.
For whatever you may think about Tony Khan, you've got to respect the fact that he does love wrestling. Even though his decisions aren't always the best, the man loves wrestling.
He almost loves it as much as we do.
Almost.
Almost.
Not quite. Not quite.
check out on the channel, believe if it's not there now, it'll be there today, the WTF Moments from Elimination Chamber with Ross Tweddle. Ross will take you through some of the more weird and wonderful moments from the pay-per-view in Australia. That'll be on the channel, if not now, in a little bit. And for the latest wrestling news throughout the day, you can check out cultaholic.com. He's at the Brat. He's at Brat Atkins on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together at Cultaholic on Twitter. And Kenshin Kobashi. It's a massive cunt. One of Jackin's favourite wrestlers is a massive cunt.
He's just a shit Steve Blackman. Shit Steve
Blackman.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.